Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollenbach. With me, my brother, my flesh and blood. What's up, Kevin Hollenbach?
What's up?
So, you know, I had you on. You just had a TED Talk, Project X. You were on that. You were featured. You got your own TED Talk. What was it about? Let's tell the people about what you talked about.
So, there's a general, like, lack of apathy, especially at my university, and I don't know, now that you're at a university, you might be able to tell me, you know, how you feel about, you know, this attitude there. But, you know, there's a general apathy towards sustainability efforts of late, and it's interesting because sort of, like, in the 70s, I think, and more recently, when An Inconvenient Truth came out and, you know, more of these documentaries started coming out about, like, sustainability issues, students were really motivated and really interested in trying to solve the problems that exist in the world, and the problems that exist towards, you know, environmental issues. And it just seems like that sort of died off a lot in the last couple of years. And so basically my talk was about sort of like why that might exist and how we might be able to re-spark passion in these sort of topics.
Those who have turned a blind eye to the sustainability movement might ask themselves, what exactly are we saving ourselves from? Indifference. Saturday, September 27th is a day that I will never forget.
UMass Amherst spokesman Ed Blagojevski told 22 News there were no arrests and no serious injuries. Alumni were glad nothing got out of control.
No violence at all, actually. But yeah, it was awesome. I mean, the police were fine, the students were fine. They weren't, as far as I remember, there weren't any problems. I mean, I haven't heard of anything, you know. So it was well controlled, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, we did it, everyone. The tailgate was obviously a huge success because nobody got arrested. Right? All right. Not exactly. Are we really more surprised by the fact that no students were arrested than the glaring issue at hand that 22 News gave an indifferent nod to? Let me give you a little more of the backstory. Quick show of hands. Who would want free tuition? That's what I figured. All right. It took $28,000 in overtime hours, disposal fees, and equipment usage to get Lot 22 cleaned up after the homecoming tailgate. One of you could have been granted free in-state tuition, housing, and fees with $4,000 of extra spending money thrown in. 22,000 pounds of primarily recyclable bottles and cans were bulldozed, transported, and dumped who knows where. What does it say about our university when we, the student body, future world leaders, collectively pat ourselves on the back for avoiding a night in jail, while simultaneously shrugging our shoulders at the piles of garbage haphazardly strewn around the football stadium? Believe it or not, the results of the tailgate didn't surprise me. The EcoRep program runs a trash sort once every fall, just across the pond from here on the lawn of Goodell. We take a few trash toters from each residential area, get some EcoReps outfitted in these fancy Tyvek suits, and find out what students have been tossing out. While these numbers are based on a small sample size of only a few trash toters from a few residence halls, they give us a snapshot of some of the habits of the students. What we found was that only 48% of what was in the trash was actually trash. 17% was food waste or other compostable material, and the final 35% were bottles and cans. Even when students are bringing their own trash from their own dorm rooms to the trash rooms, the numbers are still not encouraging. Of course, certain actions are currently unavoidable. Almost everything we buy today comes covered in plastic. Trying to live in our so-called advanced society, zero waste, is impractical. In the case of the tailgate, the university only allowed drinks in aluminum cans, so using one was virtually unavoidable. What was avoidable, however, was sending that aluminum can to the middle of the ocean or to a landfill.
Yeah, I mean, you were going after right at your fellow students for trashing their own parking lot during a football game. Like,
yeah.
They like talking and we like having programs about environmental activism, but when it comes to putting your own fucking cup away, people have a real problem with that. They're too bratty.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the other thing too is the university loves saying that we're a sustainable university, and then there's things that go on in the background that don't really back up their claims about how sustainable of like an administration they are, because even students that are passionate about this sort of thing don't really get the support that they, that they could use. So, I mean. Yeah, it's an uphill battle, but...
You only had 5 minutes or 8 minutes. What kind of other administration, hypocrisies go on that didn't make it into your speech?
I sort of wanted to focus on how students aren't really that motivated because, especially since it was going to be mainly students that were attending the TED Talk and not a whole lot of administration was there. But, so we have a divest movement on campus, and as of late, it's sort of gone downhill a little bit. In the last few years, we've been really trying to get our university to divest, which basically means that they take all of their investments out of any companies that process or extract fossil fuels. So companies like Shell and Exxon and all these big companies that have huge stakes in our university already, trying to get the university not to invest in them anymore. And actually, I think it was just today that Chico, I don't know if it's Chico State or I don't know what the full name of the school is, but Chico became the first public university to divest from fossil fuels, so that's really great. But we have been trying to do that for a few years now, and it doesn't look like we're any closer than we were when we started on that movement. And, there's a lot that the administration could do to sort of push that movement forward. And they haven't really been, obviously like it's understandable that it's our money and they need to invest it in things that they think is going to, pay off so that we can keep having scholarships and we can keep the university running basically. But sort of our argument is that fossil fuels are a bad investment to make because, and however long from here, I don't want to say how many years because people always are constantly saying the year that peak oil is going to happen and it hasn't happened yet. So, but, let's just say hypothetically 50 years from now, our oil reserves start running out, then, those oil stocks are not going to be so successful anymore. So we're trying to encourage them to transition their investments to things like renewable energy companies and stuff like that. They're very resistant.
Also, if you have Shell, in charge of telling students, master's students of engineering, what the best technology is, you might get a little biased reaction from the people that are still telling everybody to put fucking dinosaur brains in their fucking cars. aren't we supposed to evolve, Did you ever see, I was telling you about that company in Finland that came out with that water-powered car.
I saw that, little YouTube video that they released about it. That's really cool.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, how about we stand on the shoulders of those giants in Finland who just made a Porsche on 50 gallons capacity of salt water that gets 920 horsepowers. Why can't we make a desalination plant that takes all the salt water out of the ocean and pours it onto the farms in California and makes electricity and, what are we doing here? Everything is being held back by these companies like Shell, because they don't want that shit.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for the fact that oil companies sort of have, we need oil right now, and I've, always stood behind that it's not, such an optimist that says that we can just get off of fossil fuels, right away, and at the time, in the early 1900s, when the Industrial Revolution was taking off, oil was definitely the best option, there was no other way to go about it, but the problem is that oil has been a part of our economy for so long now, and it's basically the center of our economy if you think about it, based on the Industrial Revolution and machines that run on oil sort of completely running our economy for 100 years.
150 years.
Yeah, 150 years.
1860, it came out. 1860 was the first internal combustion engine.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, there you go. So it's not the fact that was bad at the time, but it's more of the fact that we're still running on this, I mean, 150 years old. Like, imagine looking at, like, you know, when we look at a landline phone from back then, we're like, oh my God, and then pull out your iPhone, and it does, like, 10 times the amount of things. It's like, all right, well, why can't we do something different with, you know, energy production? And it's just not happening.
And then the professor, it's like an incestuous situation where the professors and the you know, they're all bought in on Shell and the university presidents. Then Shell gives them textbooks that keep them back. So really, what are we running here? Like, yeah. Is this a college or a fucking oil pyramid scheme based on suppressing, you know, anything that's clever for some bullshit?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like a constant, like, treadmill of just, like, or like a cycle of, you know, the oil company supports the university, and then the university teaches the students that oil isn't so bad, and then the students end up, you know, working in these oil companies, and then they, you know, the circle goes around and around like that.
Just like a kid, a father who, like, beats their kid, and then he, like, beats his kid, and then, you know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah, learning. Like bullies.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is we're actually, it's funny, like, in our campus center, you can go into the campus center and see, like, a bunch of plaques on the wall, like, right in the center of our campus center that say all the companies that have large investments in the university. And it says, like, thank you to blah, blah, blah. So, and one of them also is, I mean, among others, like Coca-Cola and other, you know, pretty horrible companies, there's Monsanto on there, which is, like, you know, for an environmentalist, that's just like, oh my God, like, what are we doing? But I actually started taking some classes about sustainable agriculture this semester, and the amount of sort of like propaganda that's fed about GMOs and how important they are is like really, it's really staggering to me. Like, I was expecting to be going into these sustainable agriculture classes and be hearing like, oh yeah, GMOs are bad, we should be doing all organics and stuff like that. And you know, and I mean, they have a point that it's a matter of, if we're going to feed our ever increasing population, we're going to need something to produce enough food to feed all those people. But, you know, I personally don't believe that, you know, Monsanto is really helping out too much in that goal.
I mean, there is always an argument like, hey, you know, what if we made one pumpkin, you know, that was 600 pounds, then we can have pumpkin pie for all the poor people. Like, on the surface, it sounds like, you know what, maybe genetically modified food could save people, you know, if you had a giant pumpkin that could, I don't know, you know. But, I mean, and I'm sure that there are little tweaks that they can do, but their business practices of Monsanto is where, like, if any of their corn blows onto another field, because that's how corn spreads.
They sue the shit out of them.
They sue the shit out of the farmer, take their land. You know, like Game of Thrones cutthroat business practices shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they are a vampire with its tentacles. Like, look at how it, you know, can't patent plants. Like, if nature gives us an apple, and then you patent it and destroy anybody who tries to sell you an apple, or, you know what I mean? They're trying to control the very mechanism of life itself with patents and with a team of lawyers. And, you know, they're, something's going on there.
Yeah, that's always my argument about Monsanto. Whenever people sort of say that GMOs are needed to sustain our planet, is just like, okay, I understand that. Like, I get that we have an increasing population, and there's a way to do GMOs that wouldn't be as detrimental as Monsanto is doing it. But at the same time, like, Monsanto's an evil company, not because they, oh, sorry, my cat just jumped up on my desk. I heard in your podcast with, what's her name?
Carrie Cassidy.
Yeah, that her cat was in the background, and I was trying to avoid that at all costs.
A lot of cat issues. You know, she's telling me about the secret space program, and then her cat jumps on her lap, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes I wonder if I'm just talking to crazy cat ladies on the internet or if the secret space program's real. But, you know, yeah. I don't know these things. But I gotta call people who say weird shit. Yeah. I'm gonna have Andrew Bashago on my podcast. He's a time traveler for the CIA. Is he a crazy person or is he real? I have no idea, but he says some interesting things, so I'm gonna call him, you know?
Yeah.
Same thing with this guy Alfred Weber. He says he made a book about people on Mars and the CIA time traveled it back to him before he wrote it. So you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
These are the people. I had Kevin and Ned on my podcast, who says that the popes are all sacrificing babies. I don't know if that's real, but I'm going to call him if he's going to stake his reputation on it. So,
yeah. I could be getting paid off by some windmill manufacturers or something. You don't know what's going on.
Is big wind behind you, Kevin? Is that what this is all about? The wind lobby. You motherfucker. You sold out.
The whole time.
You're actually trying to get global warming to happen, so there's more wind. That's your evil plan.
Right.
Exposed you. All right, so you want to talk about your cat? What's going on?
she's good. Thank you. Sometimes, like, I feel bad environmentally having a cat because of there's been a problem with, like, field mice populations with, like, domestic cats. But, you know, she doesn't get outside, so that's all right.
What do you mean she's not doing her share and killing enough field mice to keep the population?
No, the populations have been going down. And also, like, songbirds, the population of songbirds have been declining rapidly, and like part of what they're associating it with is domestic cats like getting out into the wild, or I guess like cats that are outdoor cats that go around and just kill birds for fun.
Well, you know, all these domestic cats are being trained up with laser pointers, you know?
yeah exactly.
If you train a cat with a laser pointer, you know, that thing's gonna go crazy. It's gonna be fast, especially if you're pointing it all over the house. A bird doesn't have the reflexes of a laser pointer. So you got all this, like, whole class of high-level cats that can catch a fucking bird out there, you know?
Yeah. Cat assassin training.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With the, you know. you said in your speech also that it's all us. There's no man at the top, you know? And while you were writing this speech and sending me drafts of it and stuff, I was trying to tell you, like, listen, there is a man at the top, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a Skull and Bones, that's a Bilderberg group, that's who's at the top. And you're like, no, there's no man at the top, it's us. We gotta clean up after ourselves, we gotta take responsibility for ourselves. So
yeah.
I agree and I disagree with you. So where did you come up with your ending then?
So I guess my argument is that there definitely is, like, a higher power. I don't mean God, but I mean in our government, and there are a bunch of secret societies, and there's some horrible people and very corrupt people that are in charge, and I'm not saying that they, you know, are doing a good job or that their mistakes are our problem or anything like that. However, like what we see in Congress is, whether like you like it or not, it is like a representation of what our population believes. I honestly think, I mean, like, you know, George W. Bush, he might not have gotten elected one time by popular vote, but the second time he got elected by popular vote. And it's unbelievable to me sometimes to think that there are people in the world that actually agree with some of his stances, like that gay marriage is immoral and that, you know, oil companies are great and climate change doesn't exist. And it's staggering to me that people could actually believe that. So I guess more of my point was that just because there are these people at the top doesn't mean that they aren't they aren't people. And the more that we talk with one another and we spread the word of the issues that are on our planet, and you know, I drive a car. I take as much responsibility as anyone else for climate change. Like, I definitely contribute to it, but it's a part of the system that is in place that doesn't really allow us any options to avoid that. And the more that we spread the word and talk about it, and the more that the people demand that there's a change, the more that our leaders will listen to us and possibly even be scared of us, which I think is pretty important. But right now there's just this lack of enthusiasm, and that's not really going to scare any politicians into making any significant change. They're just going to be just as unenthusiastic and just as unmotivated to change anything, which we've definitely been noticing with all the like government shutdowns, and like they can't even pass a fucking bill to keep themselves like in
solvent
in employment. Yeah, it's just like, if they can't do that, then there's no way that they're going to do anything about climate change unless we do something about it.
Yeah. So. I totally hear that, you know, but it's like it's this weird thing where it's like they've brainwashed us very purposely, you know, and then the people that fall for all of their glitzy tricks, like materialism, when they see commercials, when they see people are only happy if they're having a Coca-Cola Christmas, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, sure, the information's out there. People can educate themselves on the internet, but, you know, it takes a lot of work. And you have to constantly face paradigm-altering information that sounds like a bunch of crazy people unless you've been initiated properly in the information and the books you're supposed to read, you know? Yeah. Whistleblowers sound fucking nuts unless you know how the system works, you know? Who would believe that ISIL was funded by the CIA in order to have a great photo shoot of, you see this, all these new Ford trucks going down the line, and you see these crazy terrorist-looking people in them, and you're like, oh, that's ISIL. That's scary. And then you're like, why do they all have 2015 surplus GMs? That's weird. And then, you know what I mean? People don't want it to possibly be true that the CIA could fund ISIL, even though the New York Times is saying it, even though there's whistleblowers already saying it. There is also the other story that these people are terrorists and they need to be stopped and we need to steal their oil. I mean, their sovereignty. I mean, they're terrorists. So, you know what I mean? People are buying that, and it's just like a war of information. But you're right. People got to take responsibility as far as getting themselves informed, seeing through the matrix, because, it's the people that are at the top right now are so insane with greed and power and short-term money that they're really trying to, they're almost like in like a Mexican standoff or some kind of like death pact as we watch our fucking planet get destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think like part, along with the educating themselves, it's a matter of like educating each other as well, because that's one thing that can definitely combat the constant brainwashing, like you say, of, you know, commercials and everything that we come face to face with throughout our daily lives, just in this society. Educating one another is, in my opinion, even more important than trying to like combat this, because like the problem with that too is you can get so easily overwhelmed. Like when I first I think the first thing that like really made me interested in climate change was Al Gore's documentary, as like cliche as that is. But at first, at the end of that movie, he shows you like little things that you can do, but it's just like, okay, but me changing one light bulb is not going to reverse the effects of climate change, you know? So it's so easy to get overwhelmed with like, there's this huge problem and I'm just going to rally against like the system. But that's just not productive, you know? Like, what's productive is educating each other, like, trying to work your way into the system somehow and make whatever change that you can. And it's not a matter of, like, just fighting this whole fucked-up system, even though it is fucked up and, you know, we should all hate it. It's a matter of trying to figure out how to fix it, because just being pissed about something is not going to change anything at all. And another, the thing about divest, at UMass that I was talking about before, the problem that I have with like what it's turning into as of late is that a lot of the students are doing just that. Like they're just rallying against the fact that we haven't divested, and they just like are going to our board of trustees meetings and just chanting outside. And like they had one or two representatives go in and talk about, like what their stance is and everything, which was great. And like, that's what we should be doing. Like just be starting a dialogue about these issues. And then they're like, thank you. And then they walk out and there's a huge crowd of students like chanting about divestment. And it's just like, that's just not going, like, you're not going to get anywhere if the board of trustees just think that it's just a group of rowdy kids that want some minuscule thing changed. Like, what's going to actually make a difference is educating other students to make all of the students want to divest, not just a small group of students. And like, they even had a couple of weeks ago, they had like a divest party, and one of the people that's involved with it that I know was talking about it, and they were like, yeah, so we were having like a strategy meeting, but then like some other people started showing up, so like it sort of like got annoying. And I was just like, what are you talking about? Like, other people showing up, that's a perfect opportunity to educate other people about what you're doing and like try to encourage them to join your cause. And they're just like pissed off that these people from outside of their immediate movement are getting, you know, are crashing their party. But so they're just not really seeing they're not seeing like the right path, in my opinion. And like, for instance, I'm actually going to a meeting on Monday with some people in residential life about how to increase recycling in the dorms. And it's because I've been like talking to some people here and there. I've been, I did this TED talk, like I've been promoting myself, but I haven't been like angry or I haven't been like fighting against the system. I'm just like trying to work my way into the system so that I can talk to them about making some change. And like, if every student that was passionate about this was doing that instead of just screaming and shouting and, you know, having their fists clenched and, you know, protesting, then like everything at UMass would have been changed already.
So you're saying that they had like the environmental meeting and it was like a bunch of like cool kids or whatever, and then like a bunch of hipsters were like, okay, so we all look cool. Anyway, listen, we want them to divest. Uh-oh, nerd showed up. This meeting's over.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. That's how she made it sound, which is funny. It's just like, that's not the point, you know? Like, the point that you're trying to make is that you have to be educating each other to change this huge problem, and you're not going to do it with 20 or 50 kids that are angry about it, you know?
Yeah. We got to break down the walls of the cliques, you know? If you're trying to protest something and then you don't, and then you also want to do it in a clique of exclusive people who don't want to listen to anybody else because they're too cool for school or something, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. But, you know, there's also, it's a weird battle, you know, there's always stuff like that going on. Just in my screenwriting workshop, you know, like, this one kid was, like, writing everybody notes like Simon Cowell. He was like, you're lazy, and, you know, and
another student?
Yeah, another student was writing, like, notes for everybody, you know, and they're like, you're lazy. The problem with your writing is you're smug, you know, just, like, being, like, super passive-aggressive. Yeah. And then I was like, hey, dude, maybe, like, write notes about, like, their words and not, like, personal attacking them. And then he was, like, arguing with me for a long time. So it's hard to, like, you know what I mean? Even no matter what side you're at, everyone's ego is going to get out of control because we're all, you know, there's a problem with this, you know, YouTube and social network thing is everyone thinks that their, like, you know, opinions are important, more important than other people because they have a bigger following on the social network or, you know, something is weird where people think that they're internet famous and they're really narcissists, you know?
Yeah.
It's making a lot of people, like, kind of, like, selfish in some ways and not, like, you know, able to share the space with other people socially as well because everyone's behind their computer all the time anonymously, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Like, oh, I have you know, 200 followers on Tumblr, so I don't have to listen to you.
Yeah. This bitch does not know how to make an ice cream cake and tumble it, okay? So you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yeah. In this environmental meeting, I got followers. Yeah. Uh-oh, the nerds are here. I'm out.
Yeah.
Results of the day, zero. Later, bitches. So, that's crazy. So, tell the people, what's your major? What are you doing? Just so people know your education and stuff.
Yeah. So, my major is science, which is, it sounds weird because everyone always immediately asks, oh, well, what science? And I'm like, no, it's just science. So, this major at UMass is, it's like an interdisciplinary major, so I sort of take the first two classes of, like, every science, like physics and chemistry and geology and biology and all that. And, so within that major I have a concentration in environmental science, which basically just means that I have to take, like, more higher-level classes in environmental science than anything else. And then I also have minors in education and IT, which is information technology. And I'm planning on going into a one-year sustainability master's program at UMass after I graduate from my undergraduate and have a concentration in sustainability education.
So you're also the IT guy on campus, yeah?
Yeah, it's weird at UMass because we have, like, a bunch of different IT departments, but there's OIT, which is the main one for the entire campus, and then I work for the IT department for residential life and student affairs. So so that's sort of how I got into this little meeting thing that I was talking about on Monday, is that, you know, I already know people in residential life, and, you know, while I happen to be fixing their computers, I'll sometimes, you know, start talking to them about different sustainability issues that I'm involved with, that I know that they have, like, a vested interest in, and
right.
You know, sort of work my way in through there. So yeah, it's a good job to have to start to, you know, get involved with some of the higher ups.
You get around, you meet everybody, you start networking, you know.
Yeah.
And then if anyone tries to go against your agenda, your environmental agenda, you know all their porno habits. You can, like, blackmail them, take them down.
Yeah.
While you're working on people's computers, Kevin, how much weird porn do you encounter on people's computers?
Surprisingly, not that much. However, people get viruses all the time, and we know for a fact that there's no way that they're getting viruses just from, like, work activities. So,
right.
You know, a large percentage of the time, people are doing stuff that they're not supposed to be doing, and we don't know exactly what, but yeah.
Are you ever worried about touching a mouse or touching a computer, or, like, do you just treat it like a biohazmat area? You know what I mean?
I don't think about it too much. I don't think that you would have very, very much fun doing that job if that's what you're thinking about all the time, but I could definitely see you thinking about that. Just, like, the amount of, like, what things the person was touching before you touched their mouse.
I mean, I would just bring a black light. That's all I'm saying. Because I know that I'm just always shooting loads at my computer, so I can't even imagine what other people are doing.
Good to know. I won't do any IT work for you next time I see you.
I just think, you know.
But yeah, I mean, people, I've seen, like, there were there's some keyboards that are literally, like, caked in just, like, crumbs and sticky stuff from, like, I don't know, juice or whatever. It's just, like, it's really food that gets it the most disgusting. I don't really understand how people could possibly, like, be eating, you know, cheese doodles and then just type away, like, without at least trying to wipe your fingers off a little bit, you know?
People got to Instagram their cakes, though. If they're a really good cake decorator,
I guess
you want to get those pictures out there. Sometimes there's issues.
Yeah.
So you had this TED Talk. Did you, you know, how did that get organized? It was like a student-run kind of Project X kind of thing. How did you get tapped to do that?
Yeah, so there's, it's really cool that it's, like, all student-run. I'm really happy that we have a program like that at UMass. But so they have a TEDx event in the spring, which is sort of like a bigger event. It's a little bit more advertised, and those talks actually get onto the, like, TED website, and the like app for Android and iOS and everything. So that's a little bit like bigger of an event. But I have a friend named David who was the guest student speaker at the TEDx in the spring a couple of years ago. And then last year, the student speaker was Derek Gordon, who was the first NCAA player to come out as gay. So that was really cool. And so I was just interested in doing a guest student speech at the TEDx in the spring. And I sort of started looking into it a little bit, and then I heard of this Project X, which is they purposefully took out the name TED because it's not technically a TED event, but it is run by the TEDx UMass people at UMass. And basically the only difference is that it was all students. So every other speaker, including myself, were students, and then there were some entertainment segments in between. So there was like a dance troupe and a improv group and some other things. And a doo-wop group that were doing stuff in between the speeches. So it was really entertaining. Like just even sitting there, I was the last speech to go of the night. So like just even sitting there and watching the rest of the night was really, really entertaining to me. But
you were the headliner. You're closing it out, you know, in show business terms. You're closing it out. That means you got the top spot there.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually originally supposed to go first, and I don't mean to, like, be showboaty or anything, but I was originally supposed to go first, and I would, like, I think it was mainly because I was more prepared than everyone else, because I already had my speech written out during our first, like, rehearsal, and everyone else was sort of, like, just improvising. But I, like, read my whole speech, and everyone was like, oh my god, we gotta put you last. So, that was pretty cool. But,
closing it out, dude.
Yeah, man. But yeah, and then also, so I'm the program manager for this class called EcoRep at UMass, and one of the facilitators, I can talk more about this in a little bit if you want, but there's like facilitators that run their own little classes across campus and that like report to me in our meetings together, but one of the facilitators was involved with the Project X organization and everything, so... she also told me about the applications and when they were due for being a student speaker, and, you know, I took her up on that. So
you got on the inside track. You were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
But you also know everybody, and you got blackmail footage on everybody as well. So if they don't do you favors, you take them down systematically, like Monsanto. You got your product, but you also got your team of lawyers, you know?
Yeah.
cool, man. I'm really proud of you, man. Yeah, you know, you're a student at UMass. You got your head on straight. You're trying to wake the people around you to care about stuff, to be to let your voice be heard, and you know, not to just bitch. And if you want to change something, raise your voice, talk about it. You know.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your proudness. I'm very proud of you as well for going back to school after all these years.
After all these years, I'm so old. You can't believe that the grandpaps has it in them to pass some classes and go back to school and shit.
Yeah.
Yo, I got a 4.0, homie.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, man.
Nice.
Sorry. Putting things in the garbage is conveniently called throwing away. But away is just another way of saying not here. Away is in the stomach of a bird on Midway Island. Away is on the shores of a distant beach. Away is on the bottom of a greenhouse gas-producing landfill near a low-income community. Just because something is no longer in your trash bin does not mean that it no longer exists. There is no away. It will take approximately 500 years for a water bottle or an aluminum can to degrade, and up to 1,000 years to biodegrade. Instead, recycling that same can or bottle limits extraction and transportation of virgin materials, saves money, and prevents us from turning another park into a garbage dump. While I would be content if all of you left here today resolved to recycle from here on out, individual action alone is not sufficient. Engaging and challenging your friends, family, and colleagues in dialogue to build an understanding of the factors at play in ecological apathy is imperative to spark any significant change. Make it clear that sustainability is not reserved for environmental scientists or policymakers, any more than writing is reserved for journalists or basic addition is reserved for mathematicians. Open their eyes to the idea that individual action compounds, and sustainability will be the new norm only when individuals chip in. Be accountable to one another to keep the planet clean, as you would with a roommate to keep your dorm room clean. Inform them that progress isn't building another strip mall with a drive-through Starbucks, but rather progress is a means and a measure of how far we've come as a human race, both intellectually and morally, and it's demonstrated by our actions. Remind them that we all share this one Earth, and convince them that indifference is not an option, and that if they hold anything or anyone dear in this world, they need to care. It's hard to take a step back and realize that most thoughts and actions are built upon years of societal value formation and past experiences. This human-centered, convenience-first mentality is not a choice that every individual takes, but rather it's a self-perpetuated facade that's built into our brains to keep us happy and ignorant until it's time to go. But progress requires that we as a species come to this realization before it's too late. One thing I've learned in my past 4 years here at UMass is that there is no man to fight against. All of these long-standing systems at play in the world are just a network of people. And we students are at a unique position in this network. We learn how the system works, and we learn how we might be able to do a little bit better than the last generation at running it. Each one of us will have a niche in this network, and together we'll have our chance at reshaping this system. This is our opportunity to make this generation the one that works.
I wanted to ask you, do you know what the name of your album is going to be yet?
My stand-up album?
Yeah.
Conspiracies and Dick Jokes?
Conspiracies and Dick Jokes. Okay, excellent.
The one that I'm going to record for my master's thesis?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to record that in like April or May 2017, though.
Oh, yeah, no.
Oh, but speaking of stand-up also, I had really good news last night. I performed at the House of Blues, and the person who runs that show is this guy, Leon, and he came up to me afterward, and he's going to put me on the regular shows at the House of Blues.
Oh, hell yeah. The House of Blues is pretty well known, right?
Yeah, man. So the second Thursday or third Thursday in January, it's like the 15th or something like this, boom, I'm going to get booked at the House of Blues proper, doing some stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
Holding it down. So these are the, you know, it's tough as a stand-up to break into, like, this inner circle of people, you know. There's these, like, six people that, like, started the comedy scene in New Orleans, like, reinvigorated it, and it's, like, almost like a cabal that I needed to prove myself to for them to kind of let me in, you know. Hi! But all I hear is this, like, mongoloid, like, give me dick! It was just, like, a tapping. Anyway, so I ran out of there. Smoke, pop, worship, and it's 7 o'clock. And I've done well in front of some of these people, but some of these people I do set and I kill, but then they're, like, they, like, leave, and they don't see it or whatever. But yeah. This time, they were right there. I destroyed it. So they saw what the fuck was up, you know?
Yeah, but, who knew that there'd be like a comedy Illuminati in New Orleans?
It really is, and their name is the New Movement, and they're totally a cult. And so,
oh yeah, I heard you talking about that on one of the other podcasts with Anthony.
Oh, Anthony Scontrino, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You know, he paid his due. He was a cult member. You know, he paid for the classes. He went up the level structure. You know, but my thing was, I already did that at the UCB.
The UCB, yeah.
And you want to know the reality is that it was way, way, way more competitive at the UCB. And I've also done that at stand-up places already in Los Angeles. So how about we have a transfer situation? If I'm a doctor, I want to practice medicine here. Without, you know, but I don't know. I had a good set on the right night. There was a moon in the distance, and you know what I mean? There was good juju coming out right there, so I passed some levels of their cult. Like, I had, like, I was bathed in the blood of their initiation.
So, I remember that one time that mom, I think it was just mom and I that were coming to see an improv show in New York with you, and we went to Olive Garden before, and you had like some spaghetti meal or something and like one beer, and then you were walking down, and you're like, yeah, I'm so ready for this. I'm like in the perfect mood, like the spaghetti and the beer combination was just perfect for improv. And then there ended up being a fire alarm and everybody had to be evacuated.
Oh my god, that was one of the worst days of my life, because finally, you know, when that happened, I had been taking classes every day for like 5 years, from 17 to 22. I was about to graduate from undergrad, having done classes for 5 years. Finally, we got booked, and it got sold out. So this was going to be the first sold-out show at the Upright Citizens Brigade, New York, where it was actually, there was a line. Remember that line? It was all the way from Gelson's all the way up the fence. And I'm like, all these, finally, I've waited on this line 100 times. Finally, I'm at a position where there's a line lined up for people to see my show. And then all of a sudden there was a gas leak.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't care if there's a fucking gas leak. Take the risk. I don't care if everyone dies. This is my fucking night. Get the fuck in there. And we're all going down with this ship. If we all
I keep saying, like, there was this line standing to see me. Like, they were all there just to see me.
They weren't there just to see me. They were there to see the spin. I was in a great troupe called The Spin, which was political improv. And me and my troupe, you know, but for me, it was a very important time, too. I was really fired up for that show, you know. We were told, we were told it's got to be packed, and it's all you guys. You know, you did it. So, it was huge. And then, we never got another packed crowd like that in the history of our thing, you know. So
yeah, well, I mean, I couldn't even come back because it was not on, I think I was on a weekend or something, and, like, I wasn't able to come back for the next one. So, there you go.
There's a lot of, you know, and on Monday, I bombed at Siberia, you know, this past Monday. And then, you know, on Tuesday, I was just in a mood, and I saw the amount of people in the crowd, and I was like, I can do something here.
Yeah,
yeah. I watched people after people get up, and not much were getting laughs, and you just put it in your mind, I'm going to get laughs right fucking now, and I don't care what's going on. I'm going to dip into some, I'm going to get weird. I'm going to go crazy, and I'm going to make these people laugh. So, anyway, the stars were aligned for me last night. I know that, you know, hey, did you see my cakes? I'm a great social networker. I'm one of the narcissists, you know?
Yeah.
I called to interview you, and I'm just talking about myself and my achievements for the last 10 minutes.
But well, I mean, we're brothers.
We have big moments in our lives, and we want to share in the glory days. But, you know, so is there a chance that your TED Talk is going to get on the official TED Talk website? Is there, like, a filtering process now that you have to impress somebody?
I really don't know. There was, like, they were saying, when they were advertising the student speakers to apply, they were saying that we would have a chance to appear on the TED website or whatever, but I haven't heard anything about it since. And the other problem was is that I actually got sent all of the raw footage, and I just edited it together myself into like what is on YouTube right now. So you know, it wasn't even like officially edited or anything. So I don't know if that it will have any, you know, negative effect on it or anything. But you know, it's more just for me as like, you know, self promotion. And
what about all the other kids? TED Talk.
So there was like there was a video editor that I was talking to, and but they said that they had a lot of other, or they were editing the other four, and they were doing my last because I was like last of the night, and they were like, well, if you want to just edit it yourself, then I could just shoot you the raw footage, and then I was like, yeah, I'll just do that, and this was also good for me because I had to stop twice in my actual, like, live performance and check my paper because I forgot the next thing that I had to say, which was really embarrassing. And I was, like, really anxious about it for, like, the week after I did my speech, which, like, you know, I shouldn't have been because when I watched it, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. But I was able to, like, craftfully edit out my pauses, so it made it seem a little more, you know, of a better flow.
You're a propagandist. I do that too. I edit my podcast if I get a bit, you know, if it's too boring at some part or whatever, I'll just chop a chunk out, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it ultimately just makes a better like, product. It's stupid not to do that.
Yeah. You're a renaissance man. You're an IT guy. You can do video editing. You know all of science. That's your major in undergrad.
Yeah, all of it.
Your major is science, so yeah. I know some one person is like, they're like, I'm like, what's your major? They're like, history. I'm like, you just know it all? They're like, yep. Like,
yeah.
That's like, you don't know, there's not like a time period? No, I got it.
From
the kaboom of the Big Bang to you asking me this question, I got it fucking nailed, homie. You know?
It's like, yeah, what was Indonesia doing in 256 BC?
Well, actually, they had a plutocracy developed.
Yeah. Like, just whoa. No, immediately.
You got history down, dude. So, cool, man. So what's the plan after you graduate?
Well, I'm going into the one-year master's, so you mean after that?
Yeah, after you get your master's.
Not really 100% sure. I was thinking about teaching environmental science for a long time, which I still definitely want to do at some point in a high school. So, like, I had, for instance, like, I had an AP environmental science teacher, and that would be something that I'd really like to do. And also, I feel like throughout my years in public school, like, was given some really awesome teachers that really inspired me to take the path that I'm on right now, and I feel like I need to pay that forward to other students that might not have that opportunity if I'm not a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm like going to be the most amazing teacher ever, but just because I know what the teachers did that inspired me so much, and I'm going to try to emulate that as much as possible. So you know, that's still out there, but then also there's a lot of opportunities in, like, sustainability manager positions in different businesses. Like, I was looking, I'm a big, like, Apple fanboy, which is, it's sort of hypocritical with, like, how much I talk about how, you know, corporations are bad and everything, but there's, a sustainability manager position in their main office in California, who works on sourcing materials for the most sustainable products and the most recyclable products and things like that. So, so that would be a really cool job to have. And then also there's a potential that I'm working on for trying to be the residential life sustainability manager at UMass, at least for a couple of years, because right now they don't currently have that position, and a lot of other people in residential life that are, like, higher ups have been taking on a lot of the sustainability manager type responsibilities, and that's kind of it's bad for them and it's bad for the sustainability efforts because they can't put their full attention to it because they've got so many other things going on. So I'm hoping that I can weasel my way into, like, making a position for myself basically before I graduate. But,
and you just stay on UMass?
Yeah, I mean, at least for a little while. A lot of the people that I know that are in, like, sustainability and higher education, they sort of worked at one university for a couple of years and then moved on to other colleges. The first ECOREP program manager at UMass was the sustainability coordinator for a couple of years at UMass after he graduated, and then gave that position to the current sustainability manager, and then he's now at Connecticut College. So, you know, there's a chance to move on and do things afterwards, but it would just be cool to sort of get something like that started because I feel like I know so much of, I'm sort of like, because right now I'm positioned in the middle between residential life and sustainable UMass, which is like the sustainability department. So, you know, I feel like I could be a good person to bridge the gap between those two departments, but you know, we'll see what happens. I'm not holding out hope for that. But so basically, my alternative would be just teaching in a high school probably right away.
Yeah, but you know, if you're at UMass, you got to give your kickbacks to Monsanto, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that professors are getting too much propaganda that much. I work very closely with one of the professors, with one of the environmental science professors that helped me to form the EcoRep class, and he's also the advisor for the Sustainability Master's program, so I'm like linked very tightly with him, and I'm fairly confident that he's not getting anything in his ear from behind the scenes from like Exxon or anything.
Right. Well, you know, you got to keep it secret, you know, if you know too much, or they'll take you down. But then, anyway, yeah, just joking. cool, man. You know, Merry Christmas. You got you had a big victory. You got a TED Talk, and I've been playing clips of that. You know, I'm gonna work in clips of that for throughout the whole show, so see what you did. But you want to impart any final words of wisdom onto people of how they should live their lives, or what are simple things that people can do in their own lives to stay more environmentally friendly?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if you're going to work this part of the clip into it, but like I have the whole section about like the things that people can do, and it's less about... A lot of times people are, like I was saying before about the Al Gore, like, inconvenient truth thing at the end, it's like, change your light bulbs, try to drive less. And I never like doing those sort of things because, you know, just, I mean, changing light bulbs is definitely helpful, but sort of like forming a dialogue about these issues with like the people that you know and trying to get them to understand because, you know, it's important that people understand why they're doing something versus just doing it. Like, if you're just like, oh, I'm just going to change my LEDs because it's good for the environment, it's like, okay, well, why? Like, you have to think about what is actually going into... and, like, also, like, let's say you're switching out a fluorescent light bulb with a LED light bulb. It's not necessarily the best thing to do because all of those materials that are in the fluorescent bulb, like, there's mercury in there, and there's some bad stuff that's in there, and also all of the sourcing and everything that went into building that light bulb, and then you're just going to throw it away, and it's perfectly, you know, it's working perfectly fine. So, you know, I'm sure that there's some sort of a trade-off. I'm sure somebody's done this calculation at some point of how long you have to run a LED bulb for it to be worth actually switching it out. But yeah, so, I mean, I encourage people to talk to their friends and family about it and really just, or, you know, even if you're not that enthusiastic about it yourself, like, look into yourself and just understand that you know, everything, all of the selfish things that you can think about with yourself and all of the things that you could always think about for the future, like, am I going to be able to get a job? What am I going to do next? How can I make more money? What's the next thing I'm going to buy? You know, you should be thinking about just as much, if not more, about the future of our planet and whether our species is going to even be able to survive with the way that we're treating it right now. I think that's more important than, you know, what's the next thing I'm going to buy on Amazon or what am I going to get for Christmas, you know?
Yeah. Just, I want to put out something there. You know, I always go in the sauna almost every day at the gym, and there's just a pile of water bottles. Like, people buy a plastic water bottle and throw it on the ground in the sauna when they're done with it.
Yeah.
You know? And I want to put a sign in the sauna that says, how about you clean up your fucking water bottle, you lazy twat? You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's not even about, it's like strictly about recycling, but it's that same sort of mentality where, like, you know, if a trash can and a recycle can are right next to each other and the trash can is 2 millimeters closer to somebody, they're likely to throw it in the trash can if they don't think about it.
Right.
And it's just, it's unbelievable. I didn't really talk about this, but with the homecoming tailgate at UMass, there was 22,000 pounds of waste, and it took $28,000 to clean all of the bottles and cans and plastic water bottles off the ground. And, like, that's that exact thing that you just said, but it's just on a very, very large scale. It's just a bunch of people that just don't care enough to walk over to a bin. And it's just, it boggles my mind sometimes that people could be that way. But at the same time, you know, this conversation isn't being had, and it's you know, I know that there's a lot of other things that are really important to have a conversation about, especially with what's been going on recently in Ferguson and, you know, around the country about all of these racial issues that still exist in our country. And that's definitely super important. But along with that, there should be conversations about what we're actually doing to our planet and each other. And it's funny, like, even during these like protests, in New York, and even during the climate rally that I went to in New York, it had, you know, 400,000 people. So obviously there was going to be some trash, but there was just garbage cans along the side of the protest that were just completely filled with like plastic water bottles and things. And it's just like, even when people are protesting against the system, like I said, like I was talking about before, you know, they're not actually doing anything to try to stop it. They're still contributing to the system, you know, much more than other people are.
Yeah, you know, I get weird about these kind of things, because, like, you know, Al Gore, he goes out there, he tells you about global warming, but then he doesn't tell, he says, oh, you should fill your tires to a certain PSI.
Yeah.
Not, hey, the entire oil industrial complex is based on lies, murder, suppression of information, and, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Like, he kind of tells you the science of what, but it doesn't say, like, he doesn't point out the real enemy, I suppose. And the real enemy is that we're not given a choice. You know, like, if there was water fountains at every corner with pure water, you know,
exactly.
Free-flowing pure water without fluoride in it, there wouldn't be this need. But because, you know, there's no public restrooms, there's no public water that's just free, there's no free organic vegetables, like, you know, being grown in spiral skyscrapers around New York City, you know?
Yeah.
We don't have, there's not these cool building projects that could be giving us free stuff with free technology, free energy technology. You know, we're being suppressed into this very narrow system of where, at the basis of it, you're going to throw a water bottle in the trash because that's what's convenient and available.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, and the other problem, too, is sort of like a socioeconomic... So one of the things about sustainability is there's three pillars of sustainability. That's, like, the first thing that you always learn whenever you go into, like, an introductory environmental science class. But it's economy, equity, and environmental. So the equity portion is about... it's basically about, like, you know, having everyone be able to... access the same like materials that are beneficial for their health, but that are also environmentally friendly. So, like, for instance, I'm sure that there's probably a Whole Foods down there in New Orleans, but you definitely experience this in LA and New York, that there's Whole Foods on like every corner, but there's tons of people that live in New York City that are of a low socioeconomic status, and they just simply can't afford to go to Whole Foods. And while it might be better for them and it might be better for the environment, it's just way too expensive. And so, and then, you know, they end up having to go to Walmart, and that goes back to, you know, plants that might be around New York that are putting pollution into the air, that are producing the things that are in Walmart at a very low cost, and that's negatively affecting their health, and then they're eating food that's also negatively affecting their health. So again, it's like a cycle, but you know, there's a large part of sustainability that's about people just not being able to access these things at all. And that's a big problem. And this whole thing with the Ferguson protests and everything, a big part of that is, you know, a lot of the people that live around the Ferguson area in Missouri, they're in the same situation. They live very close to, like, point source pollution. They don't really have the means to afford better food or to move elsewhere that might be better for their health, and that they wouldn't live near pollution. They probably have, like, contaminated water supplies. So it's, you know, all of the problems in our country really are linked together. And I think that the main root of the cause, or the main root of the problem for a lot of them, is, you know, sustainability issues.
Yeah, I mean, poverty is going to beget, like, trying to just have your base survival, you know what I mean? And so then it's like, what's available now so I can survive, you know, instead of, like, it's just like the whole planning agency of it is, like, pretty much, like, only the rich people that can hire their butlers to buy them organic food for them at Whole Foods, you know, can have healthy bodies and live longer and be free of disease and kind of, you know what I mean, and avoid these things. They can also afford the investment to get solar panels on their house and then use it. But if you can never get that investment because you're always just kind of scraping for survival, you know, we're not disseminating this technology properly, and you know what I mean? There's not... So, you know, it's this whole thing of... like, if you don't have a job that's involved in usury, you know, capitalism doesn't work out very well for you.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be using other people, scamming them, and, they, you know what I mean? Set up a pyramid structure for yourself of bullshit. Yeah. Whether it's the New Orleans comedy scene, or whether it's the pharmaceutical industrial complex or the retail industrial complex, whatever it is, it's a pyramid scheme of bullshit. So, you know, it's tricky. There's a lot of, like, fundamental problems with what we have. You know, I have this joke where it's like, you know, you ever play Monopoly with a communist? It takes forever, you know? And then it's like, if you play Monopoly with a communist, or with a capitalist, it's great, because one guy gets all the money and everybody else is homeless.
You know? Yeah.
Like, that's, wait a minute, that is our system. So, like, you know, like, one person has all the money in capitalism, everybody else is fucked, and then the game's over.
Yeah, that's the point of Monopoly.
You're all bankrupt, bitch. I'm a capitalist, motherfucker. You know, I got all the money.
Yeah, and that's a good example of, like, the sort of, like, indoctrination that you're talking about before. Like, every day we come across these things that just reinforce the system that we're already a part of, and, you know, having grown up with Monopoly and played it with you many times, it's, now that I think about it, that's definitely something that's contributing to it.
You're you gotta be a cutthroat motherfucker businessman. You gotta scam your family. You gotta give them bullshit deals on inflate the value of real estate.
Yeah.
You know? And then have them land on your shit, bankrupt them. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
It's really cutthroat. And then you kind of teach your people in your family, like, hey, if we ever do business, I'm taking you out.
Yeah. It's gonna have hotels right on the boardwalk, and you're gonna be screwed. You're not gonna be able to afford rent.
Yeah, they don't really have the global warming edition where if you get hotels on the boardwalk, a tsunami comes by and
yeah.
So it's not totally accurate as far as how the actual planet runs.
Yeah.
Are you worried about this whole Fukushima disaster? Do you think that some people are saying that the world is over?
Because of Fukushima?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that.
I don't know. I go down these weird conspiracy people, and apparently there was some, like, hearings in the UK Parliament, and some people were saying that it's Armageddon because of the radiation that's going to slowly make its way around the world.
I mean, I don't know what anyone in the UK is concerned about, because they're literally the farthest away from the Fukushima plant than anyone else.
Well, I mean, the oceans are connected, you know? If you if you put, you know, a droplet of dye, you know, into the ocean, over the course of 100 years, it'll be evenly distributed. I don't know how long it'll take, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't generally, I'm like fairly optimistic, I think, about most things, because, and it's sort of like the same thing with the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. It's like, the nature does have a system to sort of remediate things like these, and, you know, as long as it's not happening all the time, I mean, like, obviously, the spill in the Gulf of Mexico is, like, completely unnatural, but, you know, there is natural gas, and there is oil in the ground. And, you know, sometimes it leaks into the ocean. It happens. And even, I'm sure, tons of times before humans were here, it happened a bunch of times. And, you know, there are organisms that are meant to thrive on that.
There was this TED Talk, speaking of TED Talks, of this one guy who said that the best way to clean up oil from the ocean is this one kind of mushroom. if you had an airplane and you just sprayed this one kind of spore onto the, there would be this giant island of a mushroom that would grow. It would absorb all of the oil, and then when it was done, they would just kind of slowly dissolve again.
Yeah, biodegrade.
And leave, like, zero byproduct. But instead of using that magic mushroom, what they did was they sprayed dispersant, which is just like putting, you know, when you're washing your dishes, if you pour, you know, liquid detergent on your dishes, it'll break apart the oils. Yeah. But that's not necessarily a good solution because, you know, fish have oils in them and then it'll just break them apart, you know, and so it's not like healthy for the fish bodies that we eat. And then also, you know, like, so like the way they clean up things, they're not working with nature to clean up this problem. Yeah. I don't even know how you clean radiation. I hear that zeolite is a good element for that, but I'm just regurgitating that. I don't know anything about that situation, but you know what I mean? It just seems like they're kind of like trying to use chemicals, man-made chemicals, to fight these things instead of looking for the natural solution.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, it seems like that's mainly the problem, is just the remediation efforts that they do almost do more harm than good. And it was like, there's also the fact that they took forever to even cap the thing, which is like utterly ridiculous that they just couldn't even stop the flow of the oil for a very long time. But yeah, I mean, and that's like the thing with Monsanto too. Like the problem that I have with GMOs is like, you know, you have a solution to a problem. The solution is that we're going to be able to feed the whole world with these genetically modified organisms. But we didn't really look into the cause and effect of like everything that it could do. You know, we're going to make golden rice and we're going to be able to make a bunch of kids in third world countries be able to see again. But we haven't really had like any long-term studies to see what the effect of people eating this rice every single day for years is going to have long-term. You know, they're only concerned with the one benefit that it's going to have. And you know, in my personal opinion, having a bunch of people sick or you know, having four arms is not as good, or you know, is just about as bad of a problem as people, you know, dying of starvation. If they're suffering their whole life, then it's not really solving the problem. It's just sort of changing it.
Yeah, and then if they want to have kids and they start having flipper babies, you know, it's like, wait a minute, what's going on with that genetic rice that they're eating every day?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, yeah, the immediate problem of hunger is an issue, but, you know, again, like, if you use, like, technologies that were looked down upon by the oil conglomerates, you know, I was talking with one of my roommates about this, and he's saying that like every single year we're like using more and more of our stored up food, you know, to feed hungry people and stuff. Like every year, like however much grain we have, we put it in silos, and let's say we have like a year and a half of grain saved up. Every year, the next year, then we only have 9 months saved up. Then the next year, we only have 6 months saved up.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? So, like, we're running out of food in a way. Uh-huh. But then I'm like, yeah, we're running out of food if you're using fucking gasoline tractors. Yeah, we're running out of food if, you know, we're farming with pesticides and we're, you know, which also, when we're using gasoline trailers, it's also pumped. Having global warming, which causes droughts, which causes, you know, like California is in like the biggest drought ever in history or whatever. And it's like, yeah, so, you know, you know, using gasoline for everything has more consequences than people are willing to look into. And, you know, so we got to get off it immediately and save the economy. And look at Detroit. Detroit is fucked. You don't think that a couple purchase orders of some water-powered cars would help Detroit out? If all of a sudden, you know, someone bought, you know, 6 million, if we wanted to be competitive and sell India, like, 6 million water-powered cars, you don't think they'd buy them, you know? And, like, we could be competitive in the global market, but instead we take our surplus GM trucks that nobody wants to buy because they're gas guzzlers. We send them to ISIS, and then we get a photo shoot of them going around, and then with all these actors and with, like, rocket launchers going, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, oh, my God, that's ISIS. We should go in that country. We should steal their oil, and we can should continue the petrodollar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just, like, it's gone to this point where everything is so fucked, everything is such a lie that, you know, and it's all because of oil, because we're not getting over it and, you know, doing real technology. And even Al Gore is lying to us about that shit.
Yeah.
You know? He's not telling us everything.
Another thing about, like we were saying with, you know, why we're running out of food is that people, and another reason why there were a bunch of droughts in California, as far as I heard, is that people have lawns and they have golf courses that they're much more concerned about watering and keeping lively and lush and green instead of growing some fucking food. You know?
Yeah.
Like, people used to have gardens like crazy. Especially during World War II, they had the gardens called the Victory Gardens, which were to try to limit the amount of food that they were taking away from the troops and towards the people that were doing the war effort. And people were growing food like crazy. They were canning and they were doing all sorts of stuff in their backyards. And now everybody just wants to have a lush lawn. Like, that's the ideal, like, American home. It's just a, just like an empty fucking lawn. And, it's pointless. And, like, instead of feeding yourself, you're driving all the way to Whole Foods to go and buy some, you know, organic food at an extremely high price when you could be growing it right in your front yard, not have to drive anywhere.
And everyone in Los Angeles just wants a bunch of Mexicans to come over, cut their own grass, and then while they go to Whole Foods, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're like, people that they hire have to go to some Walmart or something to be able to feed themselves.
Yeah. I'm a successful American, you know?
Yeah. That's the dream.
A lot of apathy. And then they go to the sauna and they leave their fucking water bottle in
there. Yeah.
Drives me
that they bought
crazy
at Whole Foods.
It is weird also, like, you know, we go to the gym instead of just, like, work out in our own front garden, like, picking vegetables. Like, even our working out is canned in some non-nature kind of setting, you know?
Yeah. Like, even you look back to, like, even, like, for instance, like, our pop-up, like, from all the pictures I've seen of him, he looked like he was freaking ripped, and he just, like, but he worked at a gas station, and he was, like, a truck driver, and he probably had to carry some heavy shit all the time, and
he was a carpenter. He was knocking houses together.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that too.
He was an adventure man. He was out there.
Yeah. He wouldn't have been caught dead lifting weights, because he just does some badass manly shit, and he, you know, he's healthy.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're way over an hour, so it's been a pleasure talking to you, Kevy. I think we're definitely opening some doors in some people's minds with this conversation. We're definitely, you know, showing them how to be sustainable, how to look at the man, you know, how to look at the whole landscape.
I hope so. I hope so.
I think you're going to be a dangerous teacher one of these days, you know?
Yeah.
Some fuddy-duddy administrator might go into one of your classes and be like, wait a minute, you're not reading from the Monsanto book? You're not reading from the... Well, who's giving you this information? I gave you an endowment, sir. You know?
I'll just be passing around a joint in my class. It's like, chill out, man. Relax. It's cool.
Chill out, man. Hey, open your mind, homie.
Yeah.
Just puff on some of this. The kids in your class are going nuts. They're standing. It's like the Poet Society. They're standing on their chairs.
Yeah,
you know, they're getting wild. You come in with the boombox. You do a break dance. You pass a joint around, and you start laying down some, like, you know, you start throwing truth knives at everybody, you know?
Yeah.
Daggers of knowledge.
Break down the walls with my rhymes.
You're gonna start rapping the truth, like,
you know, bringing in the boombox, doing a little dance, and
yeah, man,
just start rapping.
Cause you're a man of the people.
Yeah.
you know how to speak their language. You can connect to today's youth.
Yeah. Wear my backwards hat and everything. That's still in, right?
Yeah. Whoa.
What up?
You're gonna be dangerous. right, buddy.
YOLO, so save the environment. You know what I'm saying?
YOLO. So, Google, enter into YouTube, Kevin Hollerbach, Project X. You know, it's right at the top. Check out his TED Talk. Send him some love. Is there any other plugs you want to put out there?
I have a website, which is kevinhollerbach.com, but it's, I haven't worked on it. I was going to try to work on it today because I knew that I would plug it, and I was hoping that some people might check it out, but, I have yet to even put my TED Talk on there, but, you know, it's got my resume, and it has some other video things that I did, so, yeah, you can check out my website.
Okay, I'm gonna post this just so you know, Kevy, December 23rd.
Oh, okay, cool.
You got some time.
Nice. All right, yeah, I'll work on it.
Okay, so, look out for me the first 2 weeks of, January. I'm gonna post shortly. I'm gonna be playing at the House of Blues. In a proper show, I'll probably be doing 10 minutes of just flamethrower killer material. I've, finally been inducted into the New Movement cult. So they've accepted me. You know, this is one of the first... You know, there's like two really serious shows that happen every week. One of which is House of Blues. The other which is the Howlin' Wolf on Tuesday nights is another hot room. I've yet to play that one, but... You know, slowly but surely, I'm working myself into this scene with my weird dick jokes.
This guy's spreading around New Orleans like a virus.
Yeah.
Look out.
Like a virus. So, you can either catch the virus in a glory hole, or you can see my stand-up. Either way, different virus. I'm going to be producing both of those. But anyway, that's another episode of the Highway Diary. In the motherfucking bag. Thanks to my guest, my brother, my flesh and blood, from across the country, in Amherst, Mr. Kevin Hollerbach.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming. Later.